regard of a vicar's wife's point of view towards the youth ministry. And seeing that I'm not a vicar's wife, and I haven't been, I'm going to speak to you as a wife of a teacher pastor, and that I have worked with the youth for approximately 4.5 years. And my point of view would be teamwork, and this is for myself, and it may not be for yourself. You may decide to play a role of a moral support at home and not involved in the youth at all. That may be something that you'll decide later to do. It wasn't for me. I really enjoyed working with the youth, and I learned a lot from them. I also felt that it was something that the youth need is to see both sides. They need to have, as well as a male support, they need a female role in all of their activities. And I think it's good because they can learn to know you, and they see a couple working together, they see a relationship, and they can build on that relationship, something that they may not have at home. And they can confide in you as possibly a friend or a brother or sister rather than a mom and a dad or an authority figure. And I think that's really important when working with the youth. Some of my experiences would be probably on retreats, and I think the kids really open up, especially when there is a husband and wife team, because they feel much more at ease, and they feel like, well, it's not just two men, and they're going to, okay, kids, you got to get with it, you know. They can, you know, run to the wife and say, God, he's really being mean, and he's got all these Bible studies, and we're never going to learn it all. And you can, you know, kind of say, well, I don't know it all either, and we'll just all listen together and really get as much as we can out of it. I had an incident happen in one of our youth groups. We had a young man who was in the eighth grade, and he was, I don't know what you would call it, overactive. And he liked to agitate. He liked to get positive or negative attention, if you know what I mean. And he was always disrupting the youth group. And over a period of 2.5 years in working with this young man, I was able to see him grow up and mature into a young adult. And recently we got a letter from the youth group saying that he was really turning out to be a really nice person. And when I first had him, I think there were several occasions that I would have liked to have strangled him. But, you know, you always have someone in your group probably that will be like that. So it's not all fun and games. And there will probably be many times that you go home and say, I hope I never have to do that again. I hope I don't have to go on an overnight retreat anymore. But that'll be what we called it, downtime. You need time away from the kids so that you can reevaluate and say, that wasn't so bad. There was more fun than there was, you know, there was more good out of it than bad. Some of the things that the kids do that I enjoyed was the sharing in the Bible studies. They have such tremendous insight, and that you can learn such a great deal from them because they don't feel like us as adults inhibited in any way to say whatever they feel. And when they read scripture, you know, they, well, why did he say that? You know, where a lot of times as adults, we don't say anything. You know, the silent treatment, I'm afraid if I say something, somebody will say, oh, well, that's not theological, or is that right? You know, if somebody's going to come down on us. But as kids, I think they tend to really want to know what the answers are. And it was really fun working with them, and I really enjoyed that part of it. And does everyone know, like, what a Seder dinner is? It's where you have... It's like the Lord's Supper, and you have all of the making for the Lord's Supper, but you all sit down and eat together and break bread together and share wine, and like the Lord's Supper. And we did that with the kids, and that was really rewarding because we read, as we did the Seder dinner, you read scripture verses that our relationship with you and God and Jesus Christ, and it was really neat to see how the kids really grasped that information, and that was really neat. I would say, as far as my involvement, that, like I said, I like to be what you call a doer. I like to be active, and I like to be with the kids, and I like to be with my husband as a support to him at all times. So if a situation comes up that he can't deal with, like if you have girls and they're in puberty and you have problems where all the boys don't like me, it's hard for your husband to relate to that. And we know, you know, as women, some of the problems that they go through as teenagers. And as far as your involvement, I assume with you all being here that you want to be involved, but that will be something you'll have to decide on your own when you get to your parish, and whether or not they have a youth group, I don't know. I know you've probably been talked to about that earlier in the day, about how to start a youth group or continue one that's already there. Something that I expressed before was dealing with the kids as not being a parent figure, as being more of a friend, I think is really important from my point of view now. Maybe when I was growing up, when we had our Walter League, most of the counselors were parents of our group, were, you know, our parents, our mom and dad. And I personally, after having dealt with the youth, feel myself that we had better results when it wasn't the parents that were involved with the kids. Sometimes you find a unique situation where there can be parents of the kids, and they relate really well together, and their kids don't feel hindered by their parents being there. But there are a lot of situations where the kids hold back and won't speak out and don't want to talk about any problems that they might have, or, you know, they don't really want to, you know, relate scripture or Bible study because they're afraid their parents will say something, oh, well, why did you say that? You know, look at what the pastor's going to say. And so but that's how I feel. And, you know, being that we're all different, we'll all get something different out of it dealing with the youth. Are you ready?
My name is Lori Weissman, and I am a 4th-year wife. So I did go through this bridge with my husband, and I did survive it quite well. My husband did his degrees at St. Matthew Lutheran Church in Milan, Illinois, about 5 hours north of here. And we decided, which I would like to recommend this, I mean, it's free advice, so take it for what it's worth, but decide with your husband before you get up there how much you want to be involved. So that when the point comes when your husband can't get enough counselors or can't get someone to do this or do that, that he doesn't feel turned upon when you don't do it. Because that happened to us. We just kind of, he assumed that I wanted to be involved, and I assumed that I didn't want to be involved, and when we got up there, it seemed worked so well. But we worked that, and we went on the basis that I was a per-request counselor. When he wanted someone, when he needed someone, he could ask me. And then I would decide whether or not I wanted to do it. Which I decided I wanted to do it most of the time, so I did it about 75% of the time. But it was my decision, and that made a big difference. Because I would have played the martyr's part, definitely, if I wouldn't have had to make the decision. But once you make the decision, you get it already in hand, and you go into the congregation, there's one other thing to remember. That congregation's going to have expectations. And they may be good, they may be bad, they may be what you want, they may not be what you want. But they're still there. I know one person very specifically who had 2 children. She was very busy with her 2 children, and the congregation was mad that she wasn't helping. And then I know the other way, where a wife really wanted to be involved, and they didn't want a woman helping with you. And you've got to work with that. I mean, just don't get mad if she was But you've got to work with it, because it is your husband's vicarage. You know, you can try to claim it's yours, but actually it is your husband's vicarage. And I really enjoyed myself, but I will say there were things that aggravated me now and then. And one of them was my husband's day was off this Friday, which most of them are, either Friday or Monday. But the night that almost all youth activities occurred was Friday night. So that kind of split our Friday up, but you get used to that, because if it's Saturday night, you know, kind of in competition for church Sunday morning. And then another thing that I resolved was phone calls. My husband was out doing calls during the day, so he would get home around 5, but he would leave for meetings at about 6:45. So all the people who wanted to call him, which was especially youth, would call him during that time. Well, us being the people we are, that's when we eat. And so that didn't work out for us. But I thought something that just solved the problem. I pulled out the phone. And, you know, we told the church what we were doing. You know, we said, if you get it and nobody answers, just call back 20 minutes later and it'll be plugged back in. But if you do that, remember to plug it back in or you're going to get a bunch of people mad at you. But, you know, it wasn't, I don't think, the perfect solution, but it worked for us. You know, I like it. Another thing which we did not anticipate was the cost. When we got there, which is probably true in most churches, is the budget is made up in July. And if they don't have money subsidized for counselors, you've got to foot it. And that, we had 2 to 4 events a month. And the big one I remember was going to Chicago, and that cost us $250. And you know, that was big bucks. We got lucky. Somebody just handed us the money and said, go. You know, but it's just expensive, and you know, if you can work it out some way with your congregation that at least maybe 1/4 of it subsidized, because you know, you are working and your husband is working. You know, the parents may think you're having a really good time, and you may be having a really good time, but it's still part of the job. You know, and the expenses do add up. Another frustration, which was really sad, and I talked to the people that had the same frustration, was confirmation. Confirmation was new, confirmation was exciting, but my husband came to me about 1 week before, and he said, you know, Lori, I really love these kids, but I can just pinpoint which ones aren't going to show up at church after confirmation. And he said it, but he was true, you know, on every single one. And he talked to him before, I talked to him, pastor talked to him, their parents, and that was a frustration because he felt like he lost. He really didn't. Obviously, the Holy Spirit's still working. But it's a frustration that I think you'll probably have to face at least once, you know, if you have any size for confirmation class. Another frustration is, and, you know, I was told before when I was talking to a 4th-year's wife before we went on vacation, is that you're just like any other member of the congregation. You know, not true. Anyway, in my case, it wasn't. I was made aware of this when 1 week I wore my hair up in combs, and a bunch of the next week little third days wore their hair up in combs. And then I wore my hair in a French roll, and all these people wore their hair in a French roll. And I wore my hair in a French braid, and then they all wore their hair in a French braid. And you should be flattered, I guess, but then, you know, when you don't do things so nice, then you say, hey, that's the part that gets you in trouble. But it's, you know, I don't want to burden you with it. But, you know, you got to face it, it's there. And it's neat because you can work it to the Lord's advantage. You know, you can be a witness in the way you ask and react to kids. You can be a big witness in how you react with your husband and interact. Because a lot of the kids aren't coming from the most positive home environment. And the relationships that are portrayed in television and so on and so forth aren't exactly what I would call strong Christian relationships. So that, you know, that to me is a responsibility, but it's neat. The joy that I had working with it, which is really surprising, is I had my own little welcome wagon band wherever I went. You know, you come into the church and you see all these little heads are all around you. And it's neat, you know, that they actually care if you're there because, you know, when I went to my home congregation in 2000, I could have carried a neon sign with me and nobody would have noticed, you know. And so that was neat. I also had a volunteer group. And junior high, especially, and they're just because you're not working it. I was in charge of crafts for our VBS, and I had to make 385 costume molds. I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to join this for the day I die. But you know, when you've got 20 kids doing it, it doesn't take so long. So that was, that's kind of neat. The biggest joy was Brenda, obviously, said, and I know this sounds kind of corny, but they really grow a lot. You know, they grow in their face, they're growing up, they just grow physically. And it's neat to get to watch that with your neighbor if you got to stay around a few years and watch it more, but it's exciting. I was trying to figure out ways that you could help your husband, since you are supposed to be a helpmeet, per se. First one, obviously, you can be a counselor if you want to, or a back support. I thought of one way that's kind of an awful all way. I hope this doesn't offend anyone, but this has gotten my husband out of so many pickles. I mean, lots of them, especially because we used to work at a camp. And what I would always do is on any retreat, any locking, anything, I would bring three things. I would bring some unused toothbrushes. Please make them unused. I would bring some Kotex, and I would bring aspirin. And those, you wouldn't believe how many problems those three things solve, because you're going to get, some of you going to forget the toothbrush, and then you'll be all upset because they'll have dragon breath. And then you'll especially junior high, you're going to end up with girls for their period study, and they're really going to be upset, you know, for good reasons. And then you've got a bunch of hypochondriacs that aren't having a good time because they have a headache. And if you don't have some aspirin to supply them with, you know, they're going to go on worse about it. Or they might actually be sick too, you know, obviously. Another way that you can help, which worked out well for us, was I did not work, by the way, last year. And one person had advised me to just kind of make myself public, would you say? I don't know. But like at 3 o'clock, 3:30 every day, I would go for a walk. And I would purposely go for a walk where the people were getting off the bus or around their school. And then I would just stand and talk, and they always knew I just went for a walk, and just talk, and, you know, just kind of go on my way. And we would just happen to show up at their baseball games, or their softball games, or their basketball games, or their concerts. You know, it wasn't really anything big, but it showed them that we did care so much. And it worked out pretty good because, you know, your husband can sure come, and that's new if you can. But if you can't, you can do that by yourself. I mean, it's not really terrifying to go listen to a boys' choir, you know, singing. You can just say that they did a good job, and they know that you care about them. Another one that really, it worked, I don't know, I can't believe it worked so well, was we held most of the meetings at our apartment. I don't know why they loved our apartment so much, because, you know, it was just a basic apartment. But we'd hold the meeting at the church and you'd get like 3 people. You hold the meeting at your apartment and you'd get 40 people. You have a one-bedroom apartment and it's exploding. But I think most of them live in houses and they're not used to apartments. Now that's just a little bit different. And when you kind of associate apartments with being in college or being, you know, just at high school, so they really thought it was really neat to come to our apartment. Wish they would have stayed to clean our apartment, but, you know, they did think that was pretty neat. We did have a problem knowing that we couldn't get rid of them oftentimes, so we had to end up setting a time that they had to be out by midnight. Some of them, I couldn't believe this, one time they bought their sleeping bags. They had told their moms they were going to sleep over. No, you're not. We love you, but not that bad. Can you go home? But it was fun. And another way, which is so obvious, but it can't be understated, is to just love your husband. Because, I mean, they don't have it that easy. They really don't. They're going to have a lot of questions. You'll probably see another side of your husband that you haven't seen. They're going to have to take leadership positions. They're going to have to be organized. They're going to have to be efficient. You know, they really can't be laid back anymore. They've kind of become the little pre-professionals that they've been threatened about being for the last few years. And so, you know, they really need the love. They need the support. And if they're griping and you can just go, oh, you know. You know, kind of let it go in and out. But just to support them and pray for them. They need your prayers. I mean, they really do. They're going into a totally another type of ministry than what they're used to. And the final way that I came up with, which is difficult for me, was to share him with other people. I like my husband with me, you know. And obviously, it doesn't always work that way. And it was difficult to share him with 30, you know, junior high or 40 high school, and especially the blonde high school seniors, it's not so easy to get them with. But, you know, they need Christ's love too. And so I think it's really important to teach them him. Not so easy, but, you know, you just do it. What makes it difficult? Well, it depends on your energy level, obviously. Yeah. Because, you know, after you've been working 8 hours and you come to a lock-in and you stay up till 6 in the morning, and that's just kind of difficult, but it just depends on how much you can take. Gosh, I didn't
work a full-time job. I've always worked a full-time job. And I was very active in the and still managed to do it. And I have kids at home, so, it, you know, I still have that. But one thing about having your own children, the kids in your youth group make great babysitters.
Yeah.
You can bring them almost all the time. They are very understanding of another child or even a baby. They just love it. For some reason, I don't know why, because when I was young, I had to take care of my little sister, I thought it was terrible. But your youth are different. They accept that for some reason.
Yeah, I think as far as time per se, you can go. Because if you work at 8 to 5, Monday through Friday job, I should say. Because that's, you know, when the kids are in school. Don't be offended if I call them kids. I call 25-year-old kids, so, you know, I always have to watch it.
Yeah.
We're
lost
in the youth group, and you know, what are the congregations that you're involved in all the women's groups and all the girls and, you know, all of
your girls and all of that? You know, the way I ironed, they were not asking me to be any altar girls. No, I was very lucky. I was the first vicar's wife. My husband wasn't the first vicar, but I was the first vicar's wife. Basically, but it was my own fault because, again, I did not decide what I was going to do, and I got in everything. I mean, everything. But I did not take any type of leadership position except for the craft thing, which was a mistake for VBS. You know, I was more of a backdrop person. And I enjoyed it, mainly because I got to see the people more. But you'll get the pressure. You know, but you have to decide before you go in, I think, what you want to be involved in. I think it's helpful to write your vicar's congregation and find out what groups are available, when they need, and what the responsibility is. Because, you know, they'll love you so much, they'll want you in everything. You know, they will. I mean, they love you. It's weird. But, you know, and they might even be hurt when you say no. But if you explain to them, you know, that you're trying to set parties so you don't, you know, overdo and shortcut everything, I think they'll be understanding. But you'll be off. Oh, come on, ask another question. I only got 2 minutes. Well, then I'll ask, what ways do you think there are to help your husband? If you don't volunteer, I know some of your names and I'll pinpoint you. I just volunteered to tell us how she's going to help her husband in youth ministry.
I know,
somebody. Do you want to be involved in it?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I basically
just
want to
help
my husband in the
whole entire
thing. Oh, he is? Yes, totally. There's nothing. I mean, there's a ministry for him.
And he's going in for the first and he's
going in
for
the going. So, and he's going to be. That's kind of unusual, actually. So, if nothing else, just being able to help him give him ideas on how to work with him.
Yeah.
Because he gets so worried about things, he's so involved in things, he can't remember anything. You know, definitely, I'll be able to help him to be able to remember things that I don't know.
Yeah.
outside of you, because it's not a reason to say that you were.
Yeah.
Worried about that more than,
That's a good point about being another set of eyes and ears. When we went to Chicago, we took about 75 youth up. Well, my husband was exhausted when we got there, so he decided to hit the sack, which is not the thing you do when you go walking. And so, because of my keen sense of smell and my eyes, I noticed there was some grass in the building. You know, I'm like, oh. And people didn't even know it. You know, she was clunked out. She was exhausted. You know, and so that's important. And then, you know, to kind of get the couples out of the bushes. Because he was with a group, and I was kind of a little, I don't know if you call it a little spy or what, but, you know, I would kind of go out to check this. I'd be the one who'd check the bathroom. You always find people in the bathrooms, especially on retreats. And, you know, that's important to do that because, you know, as far as I know, they've only got two eyes and two ears and two sets of arms to grab them with, so that's just important. Well, I was going to list one frustration. I didn't know if I wanted to say this because I didn't have a resolution for it. I always like to say when I'm successful, but I was not successful at this. This had to do with the grass. I told the guy who was smoking grass, I told him to dump it. And he was a senior in high school, and he was about 6'3", and he said, no. And I said, yes, you will. And he said, no. And I said, yes, you will. And I said, definitely. And he grabbed my arm, and he said, no. And I said, oh. And so I went, you know, I felt like a little three-year-old, but I went, ran about my husband, and he said, you know, and I grabbed Kevin, you know, and he got him to get rid of it. But he could totally defy me. He didn't care what I said, you know. You know, I'm used to working with like 3 and 4 year olds, and if you say something, they do it. You didn't do it. But, you know, just make you aware that it doesn't always turn out so peachy. It's, you know, it's very rewarding, but don't expect it to be all perfect because it's not going to be. Any other questions?
Do you think it would be a good idea to maybe talk to the good wife of the teacher or the one who's sitting and to read and see what she feels is the best of her? Or I guess in a way that would be bad.
Yeah, it could be. It has its pros and cons. You want to know. I mean, you really want to know. But like, like with our kids that were involved in drugs during the year, you know, on the weekend, we had a real struggle of whether or not to tell the vicar that. Because we thought, well, he'd want to know, but then we thought, well, he'll, you know, already put these group of guys as hoods or something. I really don't know. I would just feel out. If you know the vicar's wife, then I'd say, you know, do it if you trust it. But if he's just like a little name underneath a mug book, you know, I kind of feel it out. That's really tough. Yeah, I think I like finding out for myself better because you catch on pretty quick. But, you know, I think I could have been told some things that would have put a bad edge because a lot of people had changed, especially a lot of kids in youth group. Because we had, you know, some people in our youth group in AA, and the year before, you know, they were plastered laying around the house, and, you know, the year we came, they were involved in AA, so obviously they made a positive movement. But we wouldn't have seen that, you know, if we were told the year before that. So, Now we can go on to our next room, because it's time.
Thank you very much. Have a good time.
My name is Arlo Otto, and I'm the Minister of Education and Youth, or DCE, at Ascension Lutheran Church in St. Louis. Before becoming a DCE, I was a classroom teacher for 6 years, and the reason they made me a DCE is I could never stand still in front of the class. I always had to walk around and go all around, and they got me at a real disadvantage because they told me not to go away from the microphone. So I guess I'll have to, this will be a real experience. The first time I ever preached, the pastor threatened to glue my shoes down to the floor because I was one of these people that always liked to move around a lot. But we'll see how that works with the microphone here. I was a classroom teacher for 6 years, and I've been a DCE for the last 6 years. Graduated from Concordia Teachers College in Seward, Nebraska. Somebody graduated from Seward there? Oh. I guess most of you gentlemen are going to be out on your vicarage assignments, and you kind of know where you're going to go and what kind of situation you're going to be in somewhat. Some of you maybe not, but we're going to focus in on how to get a youth ministry started and how to keep it going. I've kind of shared with you a little bit of an outline that we'll go through, and the reason we're going to go through this is I'm not sure what other things you've had today other than the schedule that I received. I don't know what kind of input that you've had, and these are some things that I think are important for you to know about getting things started. Les said I did this last year, and that's true, but I couldn't find the one I gave last year, so I had to write a whole new one for this year. So you get something new. It's not the same thing you had last year. I'd like to start with the idea of some basics of youth ministry, and I've listed five things there, and we'd like to just briefly run through these and then see what kind of questions or response that we might have. The first one is kind of an obvious one, the mission. Why do it? What's your goals or objectives in youth ministry? And the reason I put that down is sometimes we jump in and we're doing things. Somebody says, well, here's the vicar. He's going to do youth ministry. And nobody sets down any goals, objectives. Nobody knows what you're supposed to accomplish or do there. I also want to point out that I think we always need to think of youth as being equal to the present body of Christ, equal to the present members of our church, not youth or future members or the church of tomorrow, any of that business, but the youth are part of our church today. They're part of that body of Christ. And we need to keep that in mind when we think about the mission that we're going to carry out in youth ministry. And also that youth ministry is larger than programs because it deals with people. And anytime you deal with people, you have to go past the programs. And I'm going to kind of really emphasize that today, the personal-centered kind of ministry, that we have to think about the person, the kids in the youth ministry, the congregation, in the youth group, and also the kids out on the periphery, the kids who aren't active, the kids who are kind of delinquent. We want to talk about both of those in the area of youth ministry. So I think that's kind of an important part of the mission, the person-centered and the fact that we're talking larger than just programs. An important thing for us to know is about youth in their culture. I'm sure maybe some of you are familiar with Mert Straumann and his Study of Generations, Five Cries of Youth, Bridging the Gap, those kinds of materials. And he kind of points out something that I always try to emphasize to groups, and that's the idea that youth have a very low self-esteem, a very low self-worth, a very low self-confidence, self-regard, kind of a loneliness. And I think that's a real key in thinking about how you're going to work and relate with youth. Dr. James Dobson, he likes to call it the canyon of inferiority that people kind of fall into. And a lot of us are still into it, and some people are just kind of trying to get out of that yet. The idea of wishing that you were somebody else, of wishing that you were different, of searching for some kind of a home, of trying to see if you fit in. And I guess I would use the big word acceptance, that's the big word that youth need, is they need our acceptance. And ministry in the church is, I guess, the only way, the best way that can happen, because God has accepted each of us. God has forgiven our sins. Jesus has died for us. We have that forgiveness. We can accept other people. We can accept youth with all of their problems and hang-ups and show them that kind of love. So that's why I think the church is really the only best place for youth ministry. So we've got a lot of youth that are looking for meaningful relationships. I'm trying to think of how many people. I've had four people over the 6 years that have tried to commit suicide that I've come in contact with, all high school or in their early post-high school age. And all of those people were contemplating suicide, all because either they felt they didn't have any worth, or somebody didn't love them, and that somebody would either be a girlfriend that they were close to, or their parents, or other peers. And they just didn't feel any worth in life. They didn't have any close relationships with anybody. That's a real problem. So that's a big thing I'd like to point out, is that acceptance, in thinking about youth culture. leadership. I don't know if you've talked about a lot about leadership, but leadership needs two things. It needs an identifiable symbol, and in most cases, that's probably going to be you. You're going to be the identifiable symbol. It needs some kind of professional or volunteer adult. And when we think of you, of course, Vickers, they're the ideal youth worker, because here we've got the bright, fair-haired young man fresh out of the seminary. He's all full of bright and exciting ideas. He's just going to come in there and take over and just revitalize the youth program, right? Everybody's smiling. They're all ready to go out there and do that. That's what a lot of congregations are looking for. A lot of congregations think it's going to happen. This guy's young. He knows what's going on with youth, you know, just because he's young. Well, I think that an identifiable symbol is very important, somebody that youth can see, an adult that's working with them, somebody that's given that responsibility. There's two things I'd like to think about with that. One is that that person has to have a solid faith, and you might say, well, that's kind of obvious. But by that I mean a solid faith that's a mature faith. It isn't the kind of person that's an oracle sitting up there giving all the advice or the answers in Bible class. If you've ever watched Battlestar Galactica, I always like this Cylon guy who's sitting up on this big tower and everybody comes in and talks to him and he comes down with all these pronouncements and everything. Well, that's not the vicar's job. That's not the youth ministry's job. But to be there with people, kind of have to think of youth ministry as a total of the church ministry, not just a part of it or not the only part of it, but part of the whole ministry of the church. And that person has to have a willingness to grow spiritually, too, because I think we always grow spiritually, no matter how old we get. We continue to grow as God changes and works on us and different things happen in our life. So we need that solid faith, and the other one is a willingness to develop significant relationships in groups or individually. And that means that we're going to focus a lot on individuals in a little bit, but outside of the formal kind of meetings, outside of formal group activities, you need to develop and to give some of your time to meet personally, to interact with youth on their own level. And that leadership, too, the other area of leadership that we're going to get to in a little bit is that we need some kind of a youth committee or board to keep ongoing youth ministry. Some of you may go into a church where you're going to start youth ministry. Some maybe you're going to continue one. Maybe you're going to follow somebody who's been a strong leader, a real dynamic person, and you're supposed to take over there. But what happens? You're only going to be there for a period of time, and then you'll probably be gone. We need to have in the congregation some kind of framework where there's a group to carry on that ministry all the time, either the youth board or youth committee or whatever it's going to be. So we need that kind of ongoing leadership. We'll get back to that. Framework just means you have to have a place for ministry, whether it's Sunday Bible studies, whether it's groups, whether it's community activities, whether it's worship, having youth involved, just like the lay people involved in the worship of the church, need to provide that. The fifth item is the process. That means you have to have communication with the senior pastor, with the board, with the parents, with the counselors. People need to know what's going on, not just between you and the youth, but everybody needs to be going on and to know what's going on and to feel like they're a part of that. We need to plan things with the youth. They need to have some ownership in that process. It's not just the adults getting together and say, well, youth are going to do this and this and this next month. But youth need to be involved in that planning process. We need to inform the congregation of the needs of the youth. Say you need a place to have some activities, you need some resources, things like that. They need to know about that. And evaluation. I always like to think of vicars as not being given the job of youth ministry, but you've been given an opportunity of making a difference in a young person's life, and that difference is for Christ. So it's not just a job that you're given, but an opportunity to really make a difference in a person's life. And that difference comes through caring adults. That first caring adult, of course, you pointed out, is probably you. But youth ministry begins and it continues around caring adults. And that means you as a caring adult when you're getting started, and it means some other caring adults to continue when you're not there anymore. Because we care, then there's kind of two important items that we want to have, and that's a continuation, as we mentioned, an ongoing board or committee that's concerned. a group that can gather data on the needs of the youth, a group that can choose the style of ministry they want to do, a group that can provide the resources and of material and people, and also the group that can plan and carry out those things. But that continuation is needed by caring adults. And the last one is organization. I don't know if they have shared with you yet this particular book called A New Start in Youth Ministry by Elder Kaiser and Leo Simek. You haven't seen this one yet, okay? This is one that comes from Concordia Publishing House. I'm not selling these, but this is one that's a good organizational book on how to start with a committee to organize, how to get a youth board in your congregation, how to get a permanent status group to continue the organization of youth ministry in the congregation. And this can be as technical as you like. They've got some real processes here. They've got some information on needs assessment. And I'll hand this one around that you might look at as you're going through there to see if you're interested in that particular one. But as far as the organization, some of you may come into a church that already has an organization. Some of you may come to a place where they have no organization, and that would be a good background. I want to move on kind of quickly to why I feel is a real important part, the last two. One is visitations. By visitations, I mean some kind of a plan where you would visit in the homes of the youth of the congregation. A plan that meets the needs of the youth where they are today. That you're saying to them that they're important enough that they don't just have to come to church or they don't have to come to a youth group, but you're going to come out to see them. You're going to come out to see them where they're at, and that also kind of attacks that problem of low self-esteem, especially for people who don't want to come to youth groups, that don't feel like they're part of a church group, that don't feel comfortable in that because they don't like their physical appearance, or they've got some problem with intelligence, or they don't have enough money. All of those things that bother youth today and keep them out of that group, you're putting all those aside because you're coming to see them. Yes. Got enough money to do that? Well, one thing that does happen when we're going to talk about times, but when you go to visit, I suggest you go in the afternoon about 4:30, and it just so happens that that's usually before supper time. And if you sometimes you're invited to eat at the family home, although that's not necessarily your purpose. Yeah. I think if you wanted to take them out somewhere, like to someplace to get a hamburger or a Coke or something like that, that would be fine too. If you would know that there's some particular thing too in their home that may make them uncomfortable and wouldn't want you to come to their home because of some problem. I've done that. I had a boy in our church whose mother was an alcoholic, and he really wouldn't like people to come over to his house because of that. And so I went with him someplace else. So I had another guy who I went over and we walked around the park that's not too far from our church. Just kind of walked around there when the spring weather came in there, and it was a little different than a home setting because his mother was always there hassling him. He figured all the time. So it wouldn't have to be, but the home also, though, gives you an opportunity to really see what's going on in your home, you know, to get to see what kind of condition and environment they come to. Go ahead. Well, okay, that was one of the items we want to do is say that you want to visit everybody, okay, so that everybody, that you know that they're not getting singled out. What I would suggest is a procedure that you would make a list of all the old members, all the new members, all the active members, all the inactive members. You've got a list of all the potential in your congregation. Then you put an announcement in your Sunday bulletin or your newsletter, and it says if you're going to visit all the youth during a specific time span. Maybe it's all the youth during the next year because you've got a lot of them. Or maybe you've only got 10 and you're going to visit them within the next month or 2 months. Or you set up a time span based on how many youth you have, when you think you can accomplish it. And then you put it in print, and then they're going to hold it to you. And you're going to be held to that. That kind of gives you a little extra motivation. Well, I said I'm going to visit them, so now I better do that. So it means you really need to set aside some time to do that. You need to say that that's a priority, and that you're going to visit all of those homes so that people don't feel that you're just singling out them because they have a problem. You know, they, as long as they know everybody's getting visited and they're part of everybody, that makes it easier for them to accept. Let me continue, and we might go back to some questions here too. Maybe, I said this to the group last year, if there was one single thing that you could do that I would say is the single most important thing that you can do in your ministry would be that kind of personal contact and that personal visitation. If you make an appointment to visit them, that kind of says to them that they're important. You're making an appointment to come and see them. You kind of say, I'd like to come and see you on a late afternoon, maybe Monday or Tuesday at 4:30. Kind of give them an option. Say Monday or Tuesday, 4 or 4:30. That gives them a time that they can say yes or no to. If you just say, well, when can I come and visit you? Well, that makes it hard for them to decide. Don't do it on weekends. They don't like weekends. Don't do it on Saturday morning. All those guys are sleeping on Saturday morning. They don't want to get up and talk to the visitors. So do it after school in the afternoon if that works out for you. That you're visiting everyone, suggest the time, kind of wonder what you're going to say. Well, your purpose there is your purpose is to promote a good self-esteem for the youth. You're there to make them feel good about themselves. Hey, this is the vicar, and I'm important enough. He's going to come over to my house and visit me. The conversation should center on the youth and his or her interests. It's not supposed to center on you. It's supposed to center on the youth, that particular person. And if the family's got some brothers or sisters, maybe more than one person's a high school youth in your church, make an appointment with each of them individually on a different time that says to them that each of them are important, you know, that you're interested in them as a single individual person. You know, don't try and do both of them at the same time because then they'll be wondering which one you like the best, those kinds of things. So you make an appointment with each one. Say that you're there to get an idea. You want to know, to get to know better the feelings of the youth in the congregation. You'd like to know the needs of the youth, what's going on. You want to get in there and talk about those things and just kind of let the conversation flow from that. You don't want to stay too long. You don't necessarily want to talk about programs. Maybe you will. Maybe that'll come up in the conversation. Maybe it won't. If it does, that's fine. If it doesn't, that's right too. But you're not there to say, well, we noticed that three of the last five Sundays you weren't there, and we were just wondering why you weren't. That's not going to go over real well. But you're there to say that they're important. Now, maybe you want to hand out some calendar or activities coming up. The last time I did this with all our new confirmands, I went around with the first activity calendar, and I said, well, I want to give you a calendar, and I just gave it to them, and then we proceeded to talk, and some maybe asked questions about it, and others didn't ask anything about it. Sometimes it is nice to come with something in your hand. Maybe it makes you feel a little better. Take some of the awkwardness out of that. What kind of questions might you have about visitation? Anybody? Yes.
Well, I resonated somewhat with your statement that to get in touch with each person individually, during the family and our time, school was trying to get talking to one of them. And I guess I was under the idea of having kids tell each other all this stuff and gather together, you know, and look at the phone chain and everything. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that the one sister, the person who I was depending on, never really heard it, or the sister would always tell them, you know, sit in a different way. And she didn't, she and her sister had the problem. So now I was specifically doing more.
We had two brothers in our congregation, and to save postage, I'd only send out a mailing. I'd put both of their names on it. Well, for about 3 months, I found out there was this big conflict. The one brother would get it, and he'd read it and look at it and put it away, and the other brother would never get it. And the other guy was, he didn't know what was going on. I said, well, I sent you this thing. He said, well, I didn't get anything in the mail. And then he found out his brother had it, so he took him down and beat him up, you know, caused a lot of family dissension there. So when we do mailings, too, we send it to each individual, even if they're two in the same house. It's worth the extra money just to make sure that they are recognized as an individual. Some other ways you might visit too is visit them in their school, and the fact that you can visit when they have games and plays and concerts, those kinds of general things, because that says again that what's going on in their school is important enough for you to come and take an activity, an interest in, and see what's going on there. It means that you're going to visit them on their turf. This is where their action is. This is where things are going on in their life in the high school age. It kind of opens the door of trust, too. And it, in many ways, it kind of increases your understanding of what's going on in that high school world today. Every once in a while, I visit out at Lutheran South. I was there yesterday afternoon for about an hour. And, boy, when you get over there, and just, you know, remember how things are in high school. Things are very, very physical, and music, and cars, and relationships between people. You know, all that just jumps right out at you when you're there, especially after school. It's real great to see them all leaving, see what happens when it's time to go home. But just kind of visit, see what's going on there. Another thing is that you may want to even visit during the day. Check the principal first, but visit during the day. And I've done a couple of things. One is be around at lunchtime and just be in a lunchroom, and some people come over and sit down with you and have your lunch and get to talk with you a little bit. I had another guy when I was in Detroit that was having a lot of problems at home, and it's hard to talk with him there. So in school, they had, through that Lutheran West in Detroit, they had what was called, I think they called it the box. That was the room that you got sent to when you got demerits or penalties, a little room that nothing in it but some desks, and a teacher came in and sat there and made sure you did your work the whole time. And so I made arrangements that I could come, and this guy, he was going to spend, I think, the next 6 years of his life in the box. He had built up a lot. And so he wasn't too worried about what was going on anymore because he knew he was always going to be in there. So I came in, and I would use that time. We got another place to go to, and that was a time that I could talk with him or counsel with him a little bit. And he felt good because at least he was getting out of the box a little bit, but I felt good because it was hopefully helping him deal with his problems a little bit that way. Just to be around, though, I think is a good thing. If they see you there, first they'll say, "What are you doing here?" You know, like, "What are you doing in my school?" But then when they find out that you're there because they're there, that makes a big difference to them. Yeah. Well, you could say I'm here to see, just kind of wanted to see what was going on at school, how things are in your school. You know, I hear you talking about this on Sunday morning and some of the things you like and you don't like, and I just thought I'd come over and see how things were. People have usually been pretty acceptable of that. Or if you're there to see an individual, you can say that too. I've come to see a particular individual. We happen to have a lot of kids that go to Lutheran South. And so when you go to Lutheran South, there's about 50 kids that I know that come from our church. Now, you're going to be in a lot of different settings. Maybe there's only going to be a couple kids. Maybe you've got 10 high schools in your church. Maybe you've only got one high school in your church. Depends on your setting there, too. Wes Stroh, when he was in King of Kings in Omaha, he used to go out and visit the shopping centers because that's where all the kids used to hang out. And he had kids from a couple of different schools. He'd go out and hang out in the shopping center and meet a lot of the kids from his church. Now the big thing is the arcades. I don't know if you want to get caught hanging out there, but even all the pizza places now have the video games and things that kids go to after school. There's another option, too. The last thing on the list is the activities. I did give to you three copies of just our recent newsletter that we send out to our church kids every month. There's one page that kind of talks about the activities, a calendar, another two-sided page that's the newsletter, and a third page that's white, that's our Bible class schedule. Now, we try to send out a calendar every month. We send these, by the way, to all the youth in our congregation, to all of their parents, and to all of our church council and board members. Now, we do that for two reasons. One is because that's gets everybody in on what's going on, and two is once we get over 200, we can send it for bulk rate, and it's a lot cheaper than sending the first class. So once we send it for 200 of them, we can send them out for about half of what we would send them out if we were putting first class postage on them. The reason I point those out is I think activities give you a great opportunity to know youth. Sunday morning Bible class and everybody's sitting around in their dress and tie or whatever they wear isn't always going to be a first-hand communication operation. But when you've got some informal gatherings around a pool table in somebody's basement, or especially we like to do some things like our canoe float and our retreats. We do a canoe float, and after people have been out on the water all day and they're hot and sweaty there's no electricity, they can't blow dry their hair, and everybody, all their defenses are kind of down, you know, they've been dunked in the water a number of times, and they're kind of tired. It builds up a little bit of a camaraderie. You get to know people a little better for what they really are. You get to see people as they really are. Same thing on a retreat. One of our last ones, after I took a guy to the hospital at 1 o'clock in the morning and appointed somebody else in charge, and came back and found out that two girls had a fight and one of them ran away in the woods and it was raining, and we had to look for her too after we brought this guy back from the hospital. You know, it got everybody real close together. They were all concerned about each other. And once we found this girl hiding up on the roof of a building and got everybody down and talked it all over, why it turned out that people still remembered that retreat, where all these crazy things happen, but that's part of being human. You know, part of our humanness is coming out there, and we were able to deal with a lot of that, and it brought people closer together in a way. So we try to provide some retreats and gatherings in some areas, not just short-term things, but where you've got to live together for a while, and I think that really does a great job of getting you to know somebody. We especially like to do that with our new confirmands, and also to have kind of a drop-in time, like a gym night or a youth room. Because youth aren't going to call up and say, can I have an appointment to come over and see you? But if you're there and they're there at the same time, that's when they're going to ask questions. What kind of questions do you have? Youth Ministry Handbook, this is Volume 1. And this has a good basis on getting things started. And this is from Youth Specialties, which publishes a lot of games, crowd breakers, activities. And that's what this does. This has a lot of activities that you can do with your youth to kind of get them to know each other a little better. Yes. Yeah, they put out ideas. And I don't know if they'll give you a brochure on those or not. This one comes from Group, which publishes a Group magazine in Loveland, Colorado. Youth Specialty does put out a lot of great ideas. If you want to, you can come up and look at the names and addresses. That's what we're doing here. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
Well, you just mentioned Group magazine. Are there free articles or some literature that you respond with or resources?
Well, I don't know if you've heard about the Synodical ones. The resources are real good. The Group magazine is really good. Those are the ones that I would recommend. Joy talked about they had a sock thing where I think it was something they included satirically in one of their youth things, and somebody took it seriously and put a kid in they gave a sock treatment for to show them what it was like to suffer or something. You know, I think you need to check it out in the library.
I've gotten some simple copies, but I don't subscribe to that. I just see it every once in a while and somebody else gives it to me.
When you say the stick of the kid viewing socks, you know, some of the battery, the feet, and that.
Some of those, you specialize that a lot of people.
Well, do you highly recommend it?